the sample axis, administered by Boyega Nelson.
You're listening to the Sample Axis Podcast.
Thank you again for joining Sample Axis Podcast, episode 77. For this episode, we have decided to go into the history books and just do a recap to check some parts of Nigerian and African music history, especially the 1977 event that had the Festival of Arts and Music representing black people from around the world, Festac 77. Today, we are joined by music historian of note, Dele Adeyanju. He is a radio head, a respected radio presenter with a solid focus on music history, traditional music history in Nigeria. Thank you very much again for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Adeyanju. I'm glad to be here with you.
All right, let's just begin with what we can describe. So in 1977, January to February, within a month, Nigeria welcomed a large number of people from across the world, regarded as the black race, to what is called Festac, Festival of Arts and Music. It was the second of the series. There was one in Dakar. But really, I just wanted to know how Nigerians received that event at that time. Going through books and videos, I saw that some of the things that would be portrayed then as black consciousness may be alien to Nigerians. What do you think was the Nigerian acceptance of that event? And I'm talking Nigerians at the very low levels.
Yes, thank you once again, Mr. Adeoye. Let me start by saying that I grew up hearing about Festac, Festac 77, but I got my opportunity of visiting the area called Festac for the first time about a few weeks ago. I came to Lagos and I started living in Lagos permanently in November 2022. So I took a trip to that area, I think about a month ago. So my friend who served as my unofficial tour guide told me that this is the place called Festac. And I realized that Festac as at that time was taken so very seriously, and a lot of money was spent on that festival. The hotels used were freshly built. A lot of structures that are there at Festac at the moment, they were freshly built. Festac then was a city on its own. The Obasanjo government really spent a lot of money to put up Festac. Now, to your question, how was it perceived? I will say that Nigeria being a religious country, some people appreciated the effort of government and its collaborator. Some people appreciated it at that time. But for the religious people, they did not appreciate it. And I can tell you that if you listen to some secular artists who played during Festac. They got a lot of eventually made albums for Festac. They appreciated government. They appreciated those that participated from all over the world. But in the religious sense, especially, which I believe most Nigerians, or let me say more Nigerians belong to that sect, they did not appreciate it. They saw it as an easy opportunity to worship these gods, so to speak. They call it Ibonisha. They did not realize that Festac 77 at that time opened up Nigeria to the outside world. They did not realize that Festac 77 at that time opened up a lot of our musicians, lot of our artists, sculptors, actors, people in the work of art, visual arts and all that, open them up to the outside world. They believed that it was another way of creating lesser gods, like it happened during the time of Moses in the Bible. But having said that, Festac still stands, though we don't have Festac any longer. But 1977, how many years from that has that been? It's been a long number of years. The structures are still standing, and the name was never changed. Now, let me end by saying that. Let me end this session by saying that a lot of Nigerians in the religious sector, they believe that we started having economic issues because government invited lesser gods. Orishas, let me put it that way, that government and its collaborators invited Orishas down to celebrate Festival, and it was at that time we started having economic issues. But I realized they do not know that the economic issues has been there even before then. Let's forget that we had oil boom, and from the money got from oil boom, we were able to sponsor that grand event. So it's mixed feelings. Some people say fine, fantastic idea, and for some other people, it wasn't what we needed at that time. That is how life is. It's always mixed.
So let me ask further that, take away the government and the planning. Marcus Garvey, Bob Marley, Fela Nicola Kukuti, they all had something in common, the Black Consciousness Movement. And I kind of saw that in the documentation of Festac, in some of the texts that I've read. You know, Harlem, art groups from Harlem coming to Nigeria, finding some connection with motherland. I want to know if at that time, Nigerians, did we have quite a good number of Nigerians who acknowledged our connection to the rest of the Black community across the world?
Well, at that time, I would say that Black consciousness are with us even before that time. It's just that we're not so connected with the outside world as we have it now. But it's been that way even before then. We cannot forget the slave trade. We cannot forget the struggles against colonialism and all that. And that's why almost every Nigerian will connect with a fella, will connect with Marcus Garvey and all these people, the Martin Luther and all that. We always connect with them, especially if we won't forget the historical issues we've had. We recognize the fact that all Black people from all over the world, they are our brothers who are separated by these colonial people, were separated by these people that saw themselves as superiors, who were separated by these racists, so to speak. And Festac at that time became an avenue to pull everybody together again as one. People use that avenue to discover their roots at that time.
Thank you very much, Boyega. So, sir, I would like to ask this question. I like the way you ended with talking about this artist, both the fine art artist, the drama, the dance, the music artist. They all got an opportunity to be able to connect back to their roots. I would like to ask a question. This mostly related to music. What was the music like around this time, this era? And did Festac by any chance whatsoever give a switch or change something in how music was produced or how it was done? Because, I know that I've seen that most of the songs after Festac, it felt like the theme of music kind of changed and switched. Was that definitely a thing? Was it that Festac was that movement that changed a lot of things? And maybe 1 or 2 years before that, what was the music seem like in Nigeria and Africa as a whole?
Yes, see, I don't think that Festac 77 changed anything for us. Let's not forget that before Festac, we've had our genres of music, especially as a people, as a Yoruba people, we've had our Fuji music, we've had our Juju music. At that time, we still have some highlife music, highlife. We still have some traces, but though it was Alive was going at that time, but we still had some players around around 77 who are still doing their style of music. Let's not forget that there was a time in this country that James Brown visited Nigeria. He came to Ibadan. He met Orlando Julius Akimode, and he listened to one of Orlando's songs. Let me try to remember that song now. I think Joe Soul or something. And James Brown fell in love with that particular song. And James Brown went back to the US to remake the song, and it became so popular. So it's not always that we get things from abroad, so to speak. They come here to get things also from us to be used by them. And before then, we won't say that we haven't been introduced to Western instruments. It wasn't these people that brought in the Western instruments. 77 was the year King Solomon started using Hawaiian guitar. And I can tell you that Juju music, it was 77 that Hawaiian was introduced to Juju music, but not by King Solomon. King Solomon was just the first to make it into an album. And there was no foreign intervention at that time. It was one of his, and who later became his band boy in 1977, Demola Adepoju, that was fiddling with his guitar and not an Hawaiian guitar at that time, who later played it for King Sonny Ade. So this didn't come from any foreign musician. The drum set has been with us. Even our style, we have our style. I think as Nigerians, we are proud people. We believe in ourselves. We do all we want to do. Yes, we come, we respect you, we appreciate you. But that doesn't mean that we should now start talking like you, singing like you, doing things like you. So I must say that those people got entertained. Those foreigners, those visitors, let me use the word visitors. Those visitors got entertained at that time. And it ended there. That's my opinion. That's my opinion. They got entertained, and it ended there. Everybody was happy. They continued the music, and we continue with that. The development of our music has been that way. Fuji music, it wasn't Festa that made Barista introduce new instruments to his music. So Festa 77 came, celebrated. People that wanted to make money, they made money. People that wanted to showcase their talent, they showcased their talent. And the rest is history.
We understand that people go into different genres of music for different reasons. Fela, maybe because of consciousness, combined high life, and some, what's the other part? I think jazz and some, he was able to combine and make Afrobeat. Juju was on one side, Juju from Nightingale down to Sonny Ade and the rest of them. High life with Dr. Victor Olaiya. And then there were the other guys that I would call urban. I don't know when Michael Cree came out. I don't know when, you know, the people who would want to sound like Americans, so to speak. In your opinion, what do you think separated the different genres in Nigeria, particularly the people who wanted to sound like Americans? Is there a trace as to where that started from or came from or what influenced them?
Well, for those people that wanted to sound like or that tried to sound like Americans, the style of music that they did then was simply pop. So it was just simply pop. And it's been on. I remember a particular Kaledosumu. Kaledosumu was doing music. It was a guitarist trained by Shino Bakare. That's Ayinde Bakare's son. Later I tried to make some incursions into Juju music. It started another style of music called Juju something. That was, I think it was in the 70s or thereabouts. But later, we had some other artists that started before the likes of Michael Cree. But let me start from the likes of Dizzy K. Falola. Of course, Chris Okwute, these people started before Michael Cree. Yes, they tried to sound maybe, yeah, let me use the word, maybe American. The style they did was simply pop. They did not do high life music, because by the time they even started, high life was gone. All the major players who did high life at that time, either with the Nigerian military doing soldier work, because after Biafran War, during the Biafran War, a lot of instrumentalists who were playing for high life artists, they had to join the army, the Biafran army. After the Biafran War ended, they were absorbed into the Nigerian army. So they started playing music with the Nigerian army, and that was how high life music started to dwindle at that time. So when high life died, juju music became became westernized, and it became just acceptable, and pop came. I'm trying to remember some of the pop stars that came before Chris Okotie, but I know that Chris Okotie came around 1979, when Baba Runeshola started his Phonetic Records, Phonetic Studios at Jebu Awa. All right, so Dizzy K, Chris Okotie, and some others. I'm trying to remember his name. I can see his photo now. He's late now. But Chris Mba, who said they were trying to do the American voice. It's just simply pop. But I must say that all these are not connected with the Festac 77. I must say that it's not connected to Festac 77, because I know that at that time we do not have access to foreign music as we do now. So it's only few people that have the opportunity of traveling to the UK or the US. They will bring in albums
called new cultures,
and you know, they are stars. People want to relate with them because they have foreign albums. For example, I can't remember when Beatles did that song, Hey Jude. I think it was in the late 60s. Hey Jude.
1968.
Okay, 68, thank you. Late 1968. So, Shino Bakari traveled to the UK, UK or US, I can't remember. I don't want to give inaccurate figures and dates now. He traveled to the I think it was the US. So he bought that album. It was a single then. He brought it down. And Ebenezer Obey saw that album with Shino Bakari. Ebenezer Obey. No, it wasn't even Hey Jude. Hey Jude came in 1968. But Ambrose Campbell redid the song into Eniri Nkoye. So it was Eniri Nkoye that Shino Bakari brought to Nigeria. So it was Eniri Nkoye that Ebenezer Obey listened to, fell in love with. It was Shino Bakari that first sang Eniri Nkoye from here after Baba Ambrose Campbell did it. I believe Baba was living in the US or the UK as at that time. I can't remember. I don't have the facts now. So when he came down to Nigeria, Ebenezer Obey visited where Shino Bakari was playing at that time, and he fell in love with the song. I believe we had to record a song in, I think, 1972. All this was even before Festac. But look at the link. We have always been exposed. We have always been in our development and growth of our music. So at 77, I still maintain that they came, they did a song, we showcased what we had, and everybody was happy. That's all.
Yes, still around the music of the time, around 1977, because it felt like, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, but it felt like there was some sort of movement, even though it really did impact directly. Was there some certain setbacks that were recorded? Because for most of us that are young people, we have more access to some of the works that were done in 19, like the festivals that were done outside of the country in 1978, by, for example, Berlin 78, where Fela did Kwasa Kwasa and all of that, and some other festivals that went around the world, and Nigerian artists were there. So was it that, because apart from the fact that you already said, you know, from your talk before that, we were already in the groove, was it that the Festac 77 was a bigger eye-opener, one, and two, was it that the documentation was so bad that having access to it became a problem, and now we have access to more other stuff, and with the amount of money being put, especially in the music and everything to be perfect, we don't have so much to hold on to.
You know that there is something in this country that we need to really work on, and that is documentation. Now, come to think of it, I'm a lover of Indian movies. Let me share with you. Burning Man was a 1975 movie. If you go on Wikipedia today and type the Burning Train, you will see documents about the Burning Train, the production, those who acted, everything about the Burning Train. Most of the actors are late now because it was an old classic. That's India. Not to talk of new movies from India. The same thing in America and from other parts of the world. But in Nigeria, type the name of a big artist, you won't find anything. Even if just 2-3 lines. That is the problem we've been having. No documentation. We are not just, we don't preserve what we have. It's so appalling that as big as Festa 77 was, today we can't go online to get a clip of what happened, of what transpired during that festival. If you try to go to NCA or the other stations, they will tell you that their studios or the library was gutted by fire and you won't be able to find anything. That is a mess we are in it as a country. And it's so appalling. 1980, 83, 84, 85, try to check out some of the works of Babasala, which he recorded in the studio, NTA studios, won't find any tape, not to talk of going back to 1977. Why do we have concerts that headline King Sonny Ade, even Ebenezer Obi in Europe? We still have them in clean format, fine sound, great pictures. I'm sure some people recorded clips from Festa 77, but I'm sure you were not going to find it in Nigeria. Maybe one day somebody from abroad will get it in their library and post. So in as much as quality money was spent on that event, the preservation is so poor because we can't have access to it.
Now that we don't have this documentation, now that we don't have these things, can we say that some artists, and I'm streamlining, before when I asked, I spoke about the impact as a whole. Now I'm talking individually. Can any artist trace back their it moment to being in Festac 77? Because one thing that we know, even in recent time nowadays, let me bring it down to this time first. Nowadays, when you get you know, listed on a festival as a headliner or part of the list of singers, it's like a domino effect or a butterfly effect that catapults you from being regular to being super. Now, even though we don't have information, is there anyone that we can tie the beginning of their high impact in music or success to Festac 77?
Well, no name comes to my mind at the moment. And the reason is that I really can't place any artist. The artist that I would have said became popular as a result of Festa 77 was Sonny Okosun, but Sonny Okosun didn't even become popular. Sonny Okosun became popular as a result of the South African struggle. And going by a track, the album released by Orlando Owo before then, he gave a list of the heads of government that attended Festac and also the musicians that came from abroad, some of them, and those that were home-based artists that attended. And some of these artists did not actually attend. They were not invited officially for Festac. For example, King Sonny Ade did an album, Festac 77.
Yes, that's the only one we can reference.
Oh, Sanade did first act 77. Orlando Award did first act 77. Theophilus Owolokun did first act 77. I can still remember two more artists that did songs about first act 77. But those three, I can authoritatively tell you that they did first act 77. First act 77 by Orlando Owo was done in the studio after the festival. The King Sonyade event was done during the event.
A live set.
He entertained a live session, but it was not by the time King Sonyade was invited. I have a document here that gave me that information. King Sonyade was invited for First Act 77, but before the letter of invitation got to him, First Act had already ended. So the album he did was a live session. It was not at the event place. It was like playing for some people outside the event place, but they had people from other nationals too. So we can say that yes, it's First Act 77. If you look at the style of music he played, scarcely never struggled to play their style of music. He played his juju music. He never struggled, he did not struggle to give them a bit of what, no, because I believe the essence of First Act at that time was to do a cross-cultural breeding.
Yeah.
Let us know what you have, listen to what we have, or come and see what we have.
Let's connect.
But by the time you have foreigners in your domain and you are giving them what they are used to, which you can't even play like they played, then you are playing. So it's better you retain your own sound. Give them what you can do. Now, Lija Dusi Stars. I can't remember. I think I spoke with Mommy Taiwo Lija Du about First Act. But I can't actually remember what we discussed about First Act. I can't remember. But I think Lija Dusi Stars and the Black Man Akib Karim, they did something about First Act. Maybe they were there or something. I can't remember, but since I can't remember, I won't like to give
Okay.
Yes, I won't like to speak on it because I have some documents on First Act 77, but they are in Ibadan. And you know, this invitation came, I think, yesterday or 2 days ago. Rather late. I would have prepared for it. I have an old book on First Act 77, who did what and who didn't, but all those books are in Ibadan.
So I'm going to pivot a little bit. So let's talk about African Link Up. Miriam Makeba was at the event. I'm seeing Franco, Luambo, Makaidi. There were people from Trinidad and Tobago, from Brazil, Stevie Wonder. But really, the African connection. So people like David Zay from Angola, I don't know if he was there, but these are musicians who we cannot necessarily connect with. I don't know where Youssou N'Dour of Senegal was at that time. But language barrier in Africa, what would you say is the reason? Yeah, Osibisa from Ghana. What would you say is the impact of not having the same, you know, different African languages? Maybe that has affected how we have grown too, musically and as an industry. What are your opinions on, you know, the African conundrum?
My opinion about the diverse language we speak in Africa pertaining to music is that the various language is the beauty of it. The diverse language is just the beauty of music. My father was a lover of East African music. I remember growing up, he used Dasun, what's the name of that car? I've forgotten. When he was on his way, he would have been hearing the you know, East African music, heavy percussion and the guitars, in his car. He introduced me to all these artists, Pepe Kale, Franco, the OK Jazz, even the Miriam Makeba from South Africa and all these people. But it was particularly about East African music at that time. And the beauty of all these things is, especially for us, is that you don't even understand what they are saying.
But it's good music.
It's good music because music is more spiritual than you think. That's why somebody was listening to a song as she started crying. She realized that the song was about agriculture.
It's not even that deep.
But the melody of that song made her cry. When I was younger, I was listening to UB40. I didn't catch the lyrics of the song, but you know, the song made me sad. So it's not actually about language. For me, language has never been a barrier.
So I'm going to take it that there are probably other problems that, because I see that we do not consume as much African music as we do foreigners. I feel that there are some South African songs, maybe from that time as well, even today, that do not get to Nigeria, but a song in the UK or a song in America would get here because of the push, because of media hype. Are there other factors like media power or imperialism that limits how African music travels within Africa?
Well, we have always believed that the UK people, they are superior. So, and there's a way they push their songs. You know, we believe in them. They are the Bible that we read. We talk like them. We were trained to talk like them. If you don't sound British, then you are nowhere. All those things are fake. It's better you just speak like a Nigerian and move. So that about that. But talking about the music, things get to improve day by day, especially with the introduction of new technology and all that. South Africans, they had their own battle. The likes of Lucky Dube, Brenda, Chaka Chaka. Yeah, Chaka Chaka was popular. Chaka Chaka was popular in Nigeria at that time, at least in the 80s. And but Lucky Dube was not as popular then. Then Brenda came later. But Chaka Chaka was the bride from South Africa. Yes, I know we had Chaka Chaka then. We had some other people, but Chaka Chaka was the leading artist. And no, there was no household then that didn't have a copy of even Chaka Chaka music. So it's not that they were not pushing to Africa. No, they were pushing to Africa. Yeah, they were pushing to Africa. I believe it's about what you have chosen to listen to. It has improved more now. But in those days too, we had some people. I remember growing up in Ilesha, there was a music vendor. He sold only South African music. Only South African music. So if you wanted it, you know where to go to. So it's about choice. Yeah. But they tried their best to push it.
Amazing stuff. You spoke about Ilesha, and I would like to now speak of traditional music. I don't know if traditional is the way to say it, but this is you are really focused on Yoruba old music. Before I go on, is traditional the best way to describe the artists you talk to most of the time?
Yoruba, mostly Yoruba.
Okay. These people Yoruba. You talk to are underrepresented. Baba SF, Olowo Okere, the long names, people like Ahuja Bello, who we may not found on regular radio, on some radio stations, but you do the extra work of getting their stories, documenting them. What's the one thing that you can summarize for us about the music that was made from, you know, say 60s to 90s? In Yoruba land, from Ekiti to Ibadan to Ogun State, across board, I believe it was mostly juju and some traditional. But still, what's the summary of some of the things you have done in terms of interviews over the last 20 or more years?
At that time, we have juju music, Fuji music, Aorebe music, Waka, Adamo, Apala. Akwiri, those were the Dadakwada, those were the popular genres. But juju music towered above most of most of them, because it was just popular, maybe because they introduced a lot of Western instruments and it was music for the elites. Maybe or maybe not, but juju music was popular. Juju music had almost all the sponsors, the record labels, they wanted to sign who is who. But I must say that the reason some of these major people, they are major, but we can say they are underreported because most of them did not have the luxury of being on foreign record labels who would give them the necessary push. And we had some who were under foreign record labels who did not get the push. So it's a dicey case. Kayodege recorded for Philips, SF Olowokere recorded for Philips West Africa, he recorded also for Badi Jaw. And I think it's only Ebenezer Obey that
Decca.
Yeah, he recorded for Decca and he became the chairman of Decca eventually. And I want to say that is grace. That is good. That's why he has access to almost all his master tapes. He recorded for, and the way he entered Decca was different. He did not enter through anybody, he just went to Decca, and one thing led to the other, and he started to roll with the major players, the owners of the operators of Decca at that time. So before any information got to anybody, Obey already knew.
He was the person.
Yes, it was a question. So envy setting and all that, but that is not what we are discussing. Anyway, Ebenezer Obey was not cool. Ebenezer Obey and Orlando Owo were not cool. I don't want to say Ebenezer Obey was not cool. They were not cool with each other, and it was Orlando Owo that had reservations about Ebenezer Obey. A lot of things happened until Orlando Owo died. They never were speaking terms. In fact, before Orlando Owo died, Ebenezer Obey went to Orlando Owo's house, and Orlando never allowed Ebenezer Obey to step into his compound. That happened. But this rivalry stemmed from their time at Decca. It was a long battle, rivalry and all that. We had some other artists. There were lots of them. But now we are trying to bring out their songs. Though we do not have the right to reproduce their songs, but at least we can talk about them. We can document them in a way. But I must say that for some other people, they were just unfortunate to play music at that time. And don't forget that at that time, there were so many wars on spiritual grounds. They believe that you have to be very spiritual. And I have got my proofs that at that time, it was real battle. It was real battle. Who gets what? Who wins who? They were using all sorts of diabolical powers to threaten their musical existence at that time. And there were a lot of war between band leaders and their band members. Some people survived, some others did not survive. So an accumulation of all this made it difficult to register some names as legends, maybe because their reign were just short-lived. So that's the problem. But they all really tried. They played good music.
I would like you to also, before we leave this angle, the local, I keep saying local, and please forgive me for this, the Daily Ojo's.
Yeah, local is local. What's the meaning of local? Anything that is homemade, that's local.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is there something we can do about some genres that are missing? Teni Ola Akpata, who made Uyomiyo, she made that song out of a song that they would sing in Ondo to take care of a child, or Amorintomanko for in church, or any of those traditional songs. Those are precious pieces that are lost because we did not develop those songs. And these are precious songs in Ekiti, in Ondo, in our communities. They never really make it out. On TikTok recently, I found a woman in Ilorin who would just pick a bike, and then she would make a song with her. So everybody in the comment section would say, make a song with Boyega, and she would go on. These are traditionally generated music that never really make it out. It's only Afrobeats that's on radio. So I'm sometimes worried about that. How can we elevate some of these songs that seem to be in the background?
Well, it's possible to elevate them. It's possible to bring them to the fore, because we're in the age of technology. where you can do something on TikTok and people, and it goes viral, and you can make your money even without signing on any record label. So it's easy. But now, getting a record label to sign all these artists, you have to do extra work. Because do you know that I was talking to my 15-year-old boy. He told me something. He said, "Daddy, your songs are too long." I said, "I recorded a track of 4 minutes, and you are telling me that it's too long." He said, "It's too long." So I asked him, "What is not long?" He said, 2 minutes. So for the younger generation, the upcoming generation, a song 3 minutes is too long. You have to keep your song short, 2 minutes. Then they will be cool and they will be fine by it. That is the kind of generation that we are looking at. So how do we now marry these things together? You remember that during the days of they sang without instrumentals. They only sang all through in the albums from A to Z, 19 minutes, so 38 minutes. So how do we, that means we can make how many singles from a whole album?
Yeah, I mean.
And technology is the in thing now. So once you can use technology, even me, I'm benefiting from technology, I must confess. All these researches and all that, I think I'm happy that I'm here when technology brings money. At least, no matter how small, you still get something and people get to know you. I was checking YouTube the other time and I realized that people that watch me most are not even Nigerians, they're in the US. Second most people that watch me, they are from the UK, and the third is Nigerians. That the implication of that is that in Nigeria, we are yet to get to a point where we can use our data to freely watch things on online. So online is the present. Online is the present, not the future anymore. So the only thing we can do in essence, summarily, let's bring everything online. Let's let people see what we do online. We have access to Android phones. So with TikTok, with Facebook, with whatever, we can create magic. So there's no corner about it. It's online.
Solid stuff. Nelson, take the last question. Let's wrap this up.
It's around or specifically to one person and how his impact has been somewhat, you know, massive in the music industry, especially in the Yoruba Fuji sphere. Longevity. Him being around for so long. Let me attach one more question, which I've been wanting to ask for a while. This is a personal question for me. I noticed that when I do research on Nigerian music, there's always a confusion in the record labels. There's Polygram, there's Tambasi, there's Premier, there's Decca. Sometimes it's always very confusing. You cannot actually pinpoint that, oh, this person was in Epic, or this person was in this person was in that. And most of the time I realize that it's always the Nigerian artist, whether it is Chris Mba, whether it is Onyeka Onwenu, sometimes even, okay, for example, we know KSA at some point they had, you know, a romance with Mango Records. Was it that they were just peddling artists up and down, or you move your hair, go to this place or go to this place? And also the Kwam question as well, which will serve as our grand last question.
I'll take the Kwam one, the K1 question first. K1 is about the most, it's one of the most hardworking artists I've seen. Most hardworking. K1 never stops. K1 is a goal getter. K1 is self-made. We all know that. Nobody can retire K1 except he decides to retire himself. Nobody can retire K1. At his age, he still goes on shows. He still goes on tours. I think he just came back from the UK.
Yes.
K1 still records albums. I was talking to one of my fathers, the Admiral Adela Abiodun, in 2007. I took my father to him. Was it 2007? Yeah, it was 2007. And I asked him a question. I said, "Daddy, it's been a while you've made an album. The last album you made, as far as I know, as at that time, was in 1992 or 1993, 1992. And we were talking about 2007. I said, as 2007, why have you not made any album? He said, K1 Kingston Idi has not made any album because of piracy. No, K1 will not tell you that he won't make albums because of piracy. He'll keep producing, keep working, and keep changing his style of music. So automatically, he's going to live long. He's a king. Like his face, don't like his face. You like his style. Personally, I love him, but I don't like his style. He's always controversial. We beating somebody here and hitting somebody here. But that's him. What some of these things have actually kept him, you know, because bad publicity is also good for artists. It's just that it should not be too much. Sometimes when you do, that's why Portable is enjoying some popularity.
Rave.
But it's not always good publicity. Sometimes you do something bad, they talk about you. Yes, everybody talks. So K1, I think, knows inadvertently how to do that. So it will still be relevant. Why I expect that Shino Peters and K1 should be on the same platform. They should be slugging it out with each other. But I think, in my opinion, SSP has gone to rest. Yeah. Until recently, that he visited America for some concert, and I see that even SSP is getting old. His steps and all that. I don't know what is happening. I've asked questions from people close to him, but when Shino Peters came out in 1989 with Ace and Shinomane in 1990, K1 was still struggling. So I guess SSP rested on his laurels, and K1 had to overtake him. That's for K1 question. He's going to enjoy his longevity. Record labels. Yes, we had lots of record labels at that time, and they were here to make money. And they exposed, or let me say, they revealed the star in lots of our talents. They made them stars. African Songs, which later became TYC, owned by Abioro. And let me tell you something, that Tabansi record you mentioned was the biggest. It was Michael Cree that told me that Tabansi record was so big, and it had most artists under them. It was owned by an Igbo man. Close to Tabansi then was Olumo Records, which signed Dele Abiodun, Collington Anyila, Oliver De Koch, Jacob Oluwole, and many others, especially even from the East. And we had Ibukunri Suinye, at that time owned by late Emola Kazim. Then we had, there are lots of them. You mentioned Polygram, you mentioned... See, the thing is, it's about contract. You have your record label, Boy Gadioya Records. You can't sign perpetually for 10 years because that was the problem in the 70s, from the 60s. Abioro wanted to sign KSA perpetually for life. When I mean for life, for too long. The first time they signed was 5 years. And 5 years, if you ask me, as you know, is too long a duration of time to sign a contract because it doesn't pay. And before the expiration of that 5 years, Abioro insisted that they must sign another 5 years, making it 10 years. And KSA dumped the entire contract because he wasn't actually getting what he wanted from the contract. He was being paid a paltry amount. And his work and the money coming through KSA was being used to service other artists on the record label. Who does that? Who does that? So he teamed up with Emola Kazim and he released the Killer Fomode on Sonade Records, distributed by Ibukunri Suinye. That was in 1974. And one of the most meticulous people that I have known that won't sign any agreement with anybody is Kingston Ade. And I'm sure because of the agreement, because of the problem he had with Abioro in 1974, which led to a court case, because there were two court issues. He first took Abioro to court, but it was spoken to, he dropped the case, and in 1974, Abioro now took him to court. Now, where am I heading with all those things? When you sign a contract with somebody, you keep the duration short to see If it pays you, you renew. If it doesn't pay you, then you move. So you can pitch your tent with, and all these Mango Records and was the Island Records that wanted a replacement for Bob Marley at that time. They were looking for a talent that would give them the international recognition. Like, but KSA backed out because, you know, they were changing the style of music, especially on the international scene. Virgin Records signed Ebenezer Obey, I think in 1982 too, but the record didn't do well and Obey moved on. Obey, I can say Obey was like the Don Jazzy of that time. He preferred to stay at home and do his thing, to take hold of the home front, to stay relevant at home. Because these people were busy at that time. They were playing social, they were playing concerts and all that. So if anybody brings any contract, they will sign and see what happens. And if you're a record label, you want to sign them, they sign you for 1 year. If it doesn't pay them, they move to the next available record label. So it's not actually a big deal trying out this record label or this other record label. K1 of the Ultimate started with Babalaji, by Omoaji Records, owned by the late Olubadan. Then later we moved on to another record label. So all of these artists, like, okay, let me just type the example of Awurebe. Ekwakara was with Omoaji Records. They had an issue. He moved to Oriola Records. After one album, he came back to Omoaji. And all these things, they are based on agreement. It's not just like that. It's not. Do you understand? So we had lots of record labels. Everybody wanted at that time. The example of Fakis Daniel.
Yes.
Whose entire intellectual work with G Worldwide remains the property of G Worldwide, no matter how many millions the album make. But now he won't want to sign to another record label. Instead, he wants to stand on his own and benefit from his own artwork. So that's why things have changed. So in the past, he can move from record labels to another. So that's just a summary of what I have.
I mean, it happens everywhere. Tenny was with Dr. Dolo, and then there was a problem. She's alone now. So Wizkid had to leave EME, started Starboy, got a deal with RCA, and this is the same problems that these guys face. I think we can wrap up here, but one last thing on Festac. Festac will be 50 years in 2027. I want to go back to the Africa and diaspora connection. If we listen to some African Americans now, they call themselves foundational Black Americans. They seem to have a problem with Black Nigerians or Africans coming over there. There's still some kind of discord. At the same time, we see people like Dave Chappelle coming to Ghana, people like Ludacris going to Ghana trying to get citizenship and stuff like that, buying property in Ghana. Will there be some merger, like Bob Marley would say, Rastafarians? Will there be, you know, this unity among all Black people in the world? Do you see that happening?
No, I don't see that happening. I just feel like people run their own shows, run their businesses, and all these people playing their roots. There's something about Africa that they see. It's not actually about tracing their roots. They are interested in making business. So it's all about business for people, not tracing their new roots. No, times have changed, and we have moved past 50 years back. So we just move on.
I think I agree with that completely.
It's about business. It's about business for people. Anybody can come to Nigeria now and say that because they want to trace their roots to Africa. No, there is a natural resource here that they are interested in. That's why they are here.
But I also think one of the things that Boyega was actually even trying to talk about is that there seems to be, you know, such a large disconnect. Like, I don't know whether that's the correct word to use, but the disconnect is so much, even though we have so many things that connect us. I mean, I listened to a couple of songs from, you know, the US Virgin Islands and the Caribbeans, and you can, when you listen to them side by side with African songs, maybe not the same, but there are some tiny, tiny similarities. But nowadays, there's always like this disconnect, like nobody believes that. Okay, they believe, for example, now the Jamaicans will say they are the major black movers of black music. Africans would say of course, we are the ones in the forefront. And then the foundation of Americans would say Africans can't sing or they are not good enough, and Jamaicans are not as good, but they are the best. So all these questions, sometimes one begins to wonder, is this the way forward, or is this the way it's always going to be?
Even between Nigeria and Ghana, we always argue about what's the best artist, what's the best than that. Is that correct? Mm.
Right.
Times have changed. Let's just let everyone do what he wants to do. let's just shut our show and move on. We are here to make money and make impact.
Mm, absolutely. The Big Max Curate, the Radiohead, the Baale of Agbalẹ́tu Village, Dele Adeyanju, thank you so much for being our guest. We do appreciate your knowledge and your time here.
All right, thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for having me.
The Sample Access, administered by Boyega Nelson.
Yeah,
you're listening to the Sample Access Podcast.